Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. We're talking Married with Children. Hit it. It was 1987. The SN1987A supernova could be seen by the naked eye. RoboCop was number one at the box office. George Michael went solo and debuted the Faith album. And Al Bundy just tried to make it through life with his family. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now joining me is a very special guest. You'll know him as one of the hosts of the Way Awesome Jingle Jank podcast, Scott Newman. Scott, how's it going?
Great, Jerry. Thank you for having me. I'm just so excited to be here. Big fan of your show.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Well, thank you for coming on. I always like hearing about weird bits, and especially the episode where the random celebrities made their Christmas debuts. That was a that was something else.
That was our first one out of the gate, you know, with the William Shatners and the Regis Philbins of the world and odd. And I thought my second episode would be really up your alley. And that was before I had met you on the 80s Christmas cartoon characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That one. And I remember when you tweeted it, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to listen to it. And it really was. It's something that, you know, is always near and dear to my heart, 80s in general, but cartoons especially. In fact, my wife likes to make fun of me that I'm still a kid. So, yeah, you've had some really great episodes, man. So thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Now, you know, when I asked you on, I kind of gave you some suggestions, and right away, right out of the gate, you were like, let's do Married with Children. And you said you could practically recite the episode from memory.
Yeah, you gave me a really long list, and I started going down it. And as soon as I hit this episode, I stopped, because this is it. This has got to be one of my all-time favorite, not only Married with Children TV shows, episodes, not only Christmas episodes, but just one of my favorite episodes of TV of all time.
Nice. So what's your history, or like, what are your general thoughts on Married with Children?
I started watching it really early. My parents were really loose. They weren't very strict on these kind of things. And I was doing some research for the show, and I was thinking back on it. I do remember my mom saying to me, hey, I need to watch that Married with Children show with you, because I've been hearing about it on the news that, you know, that there's a boycott. I said, all right, fine. And she watched an episode with me, and she said, what's the big deal with this? And that was it. She never said another word about it. It was never an issue to be raised in my house. And yeah, so I started watching Fox when it, you know, probably when it first started as a network. You remember it was just ABC, NBC, and CBS. And then all of a sudden it was this upstart Fox out of nowhere. And I was... Let's see, I was born in 76. It probably was 85 or 86, that sometime around then that Fox started. It could have been a little earlier. I'm not exactly sure. But I was early to the party, at least. Mm-hmm. And Married with Children was one of the only shows at the very beginning.
That's true, yeah. So I recall that we actually didn't have Fox in the Rio Grande Valley, and they had it in Corpus Christi, which is a little bit, you know, bigger town than us. And it was like a big deal when they were going to actually bring and introduce a Fox to the Valley. It was like a whole thing. They had commercials, and it was going to be on Channel 13. And so there was like a whole, you know, we're waiting for Fox 13 kind of thing. And, you know, everyone was excited because The Simpsons had been introduced, you know, Married with Children was there. I mean, they had like these kind of staple shows.
Yep. And In Living Color, those were the big three.
Yep. That's when it started. Yep. And oh man, I used to love In Living Color.
Yeah. It doesn't really hold up today when you go back and watch it. But you had to be there to understand the context
yeah.
of what it was like. And, you know, these three kind of lame networks that were really for adults. And all of a sudden we had this new upstart channel that was on public TV, not cable.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of content that was very fresh, and it didn't feel like it was geared toward our parents. And that was very cool. And it was very edgy at the time. It's not edgy today.
No, not at all. But yeah, you're right. It really was. And I mean, because at least cartoon-wise, I can't speak to the rest of the broadcast, but at least cartoon-wise, there was some strict standards that had to be followed. And some of those standards were eventually lifted around 82, 83-ish. But, you know, it was like everything had to be passed not only by like a censor, but through the higher ups as well. And so while they were developing shows, if they didn't like something, they would make notes and they would change it immediately, which, you know, is pretty standard, except in this case, it was to dial back whatever issue it was. And so there was kind of a lot of censorship. And so you get a lot of those Hanna-Barbera cartoons that are pretty much cookie cutter. And I love the Hanna-Barbera, but really, if you look at it, they're all the same. They're literally all the same. And that's because they didn't yeah. want to do anything to push the boundaries too much. And so G.I. Joe and He-Man kind of changed that a little bit. But, you know, Married with Children, yeah, it was like Fox came out and they didn't really go through any of those big editorial commands from the higher-ups. And I remember Married with Children, my mom didn't like it. And so it was kind of like we weren't allowed to watch it because, you know, if mom doesn't like something, generally right. you don't watch it. So it wasn't until I would go to school and hear all my friends talking about it. And, oh, yeah, did you see last night's episode? And then I remember feeling like crazy left out. So whenever I'd go to a friend's house, sometimes we'd watch it over there. And sorry, Mom, hope you're not listening. But, yeah. you know, it was one of those things that I don't know if I could relate to it, but at the same time, it was just funny. And you're right. It did kind of push those boundaries that, you know, as a tween and a teen, I really kind of felt, you know, I wanted to push those boundaries too. So it kind of.
Another thing to remember about this time in that mid 80s, there was kind of a backlash against the real goody goody stuff. Like this was the era of Garbage Pail Kids and,
yeah.
you know, shows like Married with Children that were very edgy. And at the time, they were very trashy, and that was part of the appeal. I know I really liked it. Like I said, my parents didn't really care all that much. I wouldn't say they were fans, mm-hmm. but it was okay. Before this, though, you were watching ALF and, you know, really wholesome TV. And
Family Ties.
This felt very Family Ties and I can't even think of some of the others.
Yeah,
but this was what I wanted. And it was probably part of it was my age. You know, I was like 11, 12, 13, whatever, mm-hmm. just in those ripe years where you want to start making the world for yourself. So watching this stuff on Fox, that was definitely part of it. So specifically with Married with Children, I liked it from the very beginning.
Nice.
And I was doing some research for this episode and I didn't remember much about the woman that complained and started the boycott of the advertisers for Married with Children. And I found out it was in 1989. I thought it was earlier than that.
Yeah, so did I.
Her name was Terry Ricolta. And I watched some cool stuff on YouTube with one of the original producers of the show. And I guess what actually happened was she put her two kids in front of the TV and left the room. She didn't even see the episode that she found objectionable. And then she heard her kids talk about it. I might have the details a little bit wrong, but that was basically the gist of it. And then started a letter writing campaign. the irony of it, though, is that it was her letter writing campaign and the news that it started that made the show explode in popularity. So you had the Streisand effect going on. So, so whoops, sorry, Terry, yeah. you missed the mark on there. And you know, like I said, my mom made sure it was okay and didn't think it was terribly objectionable. And of course it pushed boundaries but I loved it. And I don't know. I'm still a fan to this day. Mm-hmm. For a long time, Married with Children was on Netflix and I would just pick an episode every morning when I was making breakfast, cause I could see my TV from my kitchen and just put on an episode. And then they took it off. And very recently I bought Married with Children, the entire series for $29 on iTunes.
Oh, nice.
So I now own all of it again. And I don't watch it all the time, but every once in a while, you know, I'll reach in, especially the golden years in the middle. But now the episode that we're going to talk about today was in the second season. So it was very early and the show still felt a little raw and like it was getting its feet underneath itself.
Yeah. You can tell they're still trying to find their character and their characters' voices and yeah, not quite locked in yet. Cause it ran for 11 seasons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really had its, you know, its time to develop. And I mean, they look young, you know, they look very young.
Oh, you know, that's something that's very funny. You know, I'm in my 40s now, mm-hmm. and you look back and both Ed O'Neill and Katie Sagal, they were in their 30s, but they didn't look like 30-year-olds to me. They looked like old people growing up.
Yes.
So to watch it now and they're younger than we are is like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah, I remember thinking that every time, you know, because you'd hear that the theme song. I mean, it's so iconic, you know, Sinatra.
And so
you knew it was coming. And every time, you know, you'd see him and you're like, God, that guy, he's like so beat down by life. And he's so, you know, he's so old. And like, he's what I imagine middle age to be, almost, you know, like kind of like Craig T. Nelson. Like you always think of Craig T.
Yeah, exactly.
Like middle age, you know. And so you'd see him and he's had this terrible life. But you're right. I mean, they were only 30. I mean, it's, or, you know, in their 30s. So it's really crazy to think about.
Yeah. And one of the goals of the show, according to the producers that I saw on a YouTube video mm-hmm. documentary that I was watching, was you look at this family and you feel better about your own life. So it was taken to an extreme that this, you know, Al Bundy was supposed to be a loser.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was supposed to have a horrible wife and, you know, awful kids. And you were supposed to watch it and feel better about yourself. I think I was too young for that to appeal to me.
Right.
But it's still pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I totally get it now. But I agree. At the time, that went way over my head.
Yeah, he's the Archie Bunker of the 80s, really.
He really is. I mean, he's kind of a curmudgeon. You know, he's saddled with this awful wife and, like you said, terrible kids. But, I mean, he's just something about him. There's also a charm about it, which is kind of strange because you don't expect it in you know, this kind of a situation. But there really is something about it that draws
him. He does have a wonderful charm about him. And something else interesting, it's like I'm getting paid to talk about this documentary I watched. It was just so interesting. He said it took him over a year to cast the character of Al Bundy because everybody that came in was reading the part like Jackie Gleason. And yelling and being mad. And then when Ed O'Neill came in and read for it, he said he modeled it after his uncle, who was just resigned to life. And he came in and, like, you know, Al, I ran over the dog today. Okay, what's for dinner? You know, yeah. Just not, and took the part in the direction that was completely different. And he's just beaten down by life. And it, you know, his running gag is he's always waiting to die, which is kind of dark in a way. There is a darkness to this comedy.
Yeah, but I think
all of that appeal, all of that was part of the appeal.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's what makes it work, you know. Just it's one of those moments, and they're kind of rare, especially in TV nowadays, but you know, it's one of those moments that where all the pieces just fit. And
yeah.
And it works.
Yeah, it was a perfect cast.
Yeah.
You know, the characters were so believable. It didn't feel like they were acting. And yeah. I watched it for every single season. Like, well, here's a question for you though, Jerry. Okay. Were you a Steve fan or a Jefferson Darcy fan?
I prefer Jefferson, honestly. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because when I started actually watching it, I didn't even remember Steve. It wasn't until later that I saw some reruns and I was like, who's this guy? And so then I called up my buddy who had watched it, you know, throughout its whole premiere. And he was like, yeah, that's who Marcy was married to first. And I mean, I had completely forgotten that.
So. If you're listening and you don't know what we're talking about 4 seasons in, they changed one of the lead characters. It was the neighbor's husband. Mm-hmm. He went off in real life. He wanted to have a Broadway solo career. I don't think it ever worked. I don't think it worked out for him.
I don't think it did
either.
Yeah.
So they wrote him off the show by making him a forest ranger. And he just leaves his wife, Marcy, and disappears. And then the next season, this young playboy kind of guy, Jefferson Darcy, who used to be on the Love Boat.
He was also in Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, that's how I remember him most. He was the head of the Alpha Betas.
So he came in and took over, and he was the neighbor's husband and Steve ever was, but really he was the Sammy Hagar to Steve being Van Halen. Yeah, David Lee Roth. Yeah. Wow. You know, he was the blonde replacement, really.
Yeah.
So I was a Jefferson Darcy fan. I always liked him better, but I also just watched many more episodes with him. And I liked it all though.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about Jefferson. He, I think, has a lot more charisma than Steve ever did. And
so, they had that running gag about him being in the CIA too. And they didn't bring it out often.
Uh-huh.
And it's still a funny gag when you watch some of the episodes.
Well, wasn't he an ex-con? I thought he was a...
Yes, okay. He was. He had been conning people out of retirement homes, and that was out of retirement property. And Al had saved all his money and sent it off, not knowing that Jefferson worked for this company that was really selling like a landfill with nuclear waste in it or something.
Love it.
But the episode that we're going to talk about today, this was before all of that. This was at the
beginning. Right, right.
It was the second season. It was really the beginning of the show. You didn't have a lot of history Mm-mm. with all the characters, and it's just funny for the story's sake. It's not funny because of any kind of recurring gags that go on in the show.
One thing that I didn't remember, because it's been a few years since I've really just sat down and watched the show, is I didn't remember how many like just quips there were, you know, just quick comebacks. And I knew there was some, because that's like a hallmark of the show, but I didn't remember like how many. It's just riddled with, you know, one-liners here and there.
Yeah, it is very snarky back and forth dialogue between, especially between Al and Peg.
And Peg, yeah.
Oh, and the kids too, though. That was the other thing, is the way the kids talked to the parents, that was heresy to some grown-ups at the time. Like, can you believe this show and how the kids talk? And we were kids, we thought it was really cool.
We thought it was cool, yeah, because if I had said anything like that to my mom, I would have been beaten up. So
yeah, at the beginning of the episode, he says, apologize to your sister. Oh, no. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I just watched it last night for this. Yeah. And wow.
Oh, yeah, for real. No, absolutely no consequences. But you're right. He's kind of like, you know, his uncle. It's just like, yeah, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But part of the charm of this episode mm-hmm. is that black title card that's at the beginning.
Yes.
And I don't have the exact verbiage that was on it, but it said, this depicts a Bundy family Christmas. It might mm-hmm. be very upsetting to younger viewers.
Yep.
Yeah. Viewer discretion is advised. And boy, as a, I don't know how old he was. I'm going to say I was 11. As an 11-year-old, wow. Like, oh, I can't wait to watch this. This is going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right away, it sets the tone because, you know, something.
Yeah, it does. It does set the tone. You're right.
And so you're like, okay, well, what's going to happen? And so it starts off, where they're just kind of watching a commercial for the new mall, I believe is what, you know, sitting on the couch.
The Lakeside Mall.
Yep.
And the joke that has already been established in the show at this point is that Al Bundy works in a shoe store in the mall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the entirety of the show, he was a shoe salesman and he was a loser. That was just what he was designed to be. But now there's a competing mall that's taking all the business from his mall, and he's not going to have any money to buy presents.
Right, right. And, I mean, you know, he mentions that over and over throughout the episode. You know, it's killing me. And, of course, there's another quip about,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. I thought mom was doing that.
Yeah. it's great bits here and there. But they're talking about, there's going to be a Santa that even parachutes down. And so he's trying to pull up some ornaments and decorations and stuff from, I don't know, I guess it's their basement or the closet.
The basement.
Yeah. Yep. And so, you know, of course we get a whole bit about, oh, you know, yeah, I'm getting a hernia or kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Don't bother to help me, kids. And
yeah. And Peg comes in the door mm-hmm. and she's singing the same theme song that they've been putting, because the kids are watching, and one of the charms of Married with Children is that you always saw their living room from the perspective of their television, from the point of view, like, yes. They were always looking at the television, which was you.
Yeah.
So I can't say that. Actually, there was one episode where they actually turned the camera around and you see the television. but that's very, very, very late in the show's run. Mm-hmm. So you just, all you ever hear is the TV, and they said, Santa Claus is coming to the Lakeside Mall.
Yeah.
And Peg walks in and says, Santa Claus is coming to the Lakeside Mall. And she's got a Lakeside Mall bag in her hand.
Oh yeah. I think there's a couple even.
She always has a lot.
And right away, the first thing she says is, give me more money. I want to go back to the mall.
Yeah, let's go back. Yeah. And, you know, Peg, that mall's killing me. What does she say? It's not like I was buying shoes there. And then you see Bud in the background's pulling shoes out of the bag.
Yeah, some purple shoes, of course.
But
the joke before that even is, you know, he says it only appeals to like low life shoppers. It's full of low class, you know, tasteless shoppers. And
Then she walks in with the bags.
You know, which is a good bit. Cements the whole, awful wife kind of a thing. But
the neighbors come over, and mm-hmm. that was a, I guess you just had to suspend reality on that, because they would just open. Eventually they would just open the door and walk in. In this episode, they do knock on the door and Steve grudgingly, sings "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" because Marcy eggs him on, and and they give him, they give the Bundys gifts and Peg takes them and says, I'm glad you labeled them. We don't want to get them mixed up with ones Al gave us. And there isn't even a tree.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the bits, you know. It's they talk about in the whole episode, and I guess it's like the running theme about how you can always see someone less fortunate than you and feel better about yourself, you know, like you mentioned earlier. But there's this cool thing where they have a tree stand that's part of the decorations. Right. And so, like, did everybody pick out their tree? And they're like, yeah, at the Ginty house, it's got lots of tinsel.
Ginty house, yeah. It has lots of tinsel on it.
And he says, well, you know, the day after Christmas, he throws it out. So, you know, it's your kid's job to go get it.
Yep, that'll be our tree. Yeah. And then he sits down, and that was it. And he sits down and says, well, that about does it for Christmas this year. I'm tired. Yeah.
So then they start bugging him about presents, and he's like, okay, well, I got to go get my Christmas bonus, and then, you know, I'll go shopping. And he's
boy, wasn't the Christmas bonus a mainstay of 80s television TV writing?
It really was. Well, I mean, even, Christmas Vacation, you know, even in the movie, it kind of pervaded that whole, ethos there.
Or Simpsons roasting on an open fire. He doesn't get his Christmas bonus. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been gainfully employed for 20 years or more. I've gotten a Christmas bonus maybe once in my life.
That sounds about right.
It's not a thing.
I guess it was in the 80s. I don't know.
I guess it was. Yeah. Like pensions. I don't know.
Or something. Yeah. So, of course, you know, he's like, I'm going to go get my bonus, and then I'll go buy your presents. They're like, Dad, but the mall's going to be packed. And, of course, we get another joke. Not my mall.
Not my mall, son.
My mall will be packed.
Yeah. And then he leaves, and I believe that that they decide to do it for a gift for Al. And she says, go upstairs to your closet and get his favorite shirt.
Yeah.
And they're going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw Christmas, a belt that'd be great for his birthday.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's classic. But it's so funny, you know, the way that they establish that they don't really have a lot of money, even though Peggy's out shopping and buying shoes and stuff. But even later on, there's a bit about, you know, no presents. Now it's going to feel like our birthday.
Like our birthdays, yeah. Yeah, and they always push that joke really far on Married with Children about never having any money, but Peg shops all the time.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So... You know, I mean, I don't know why Al doesn't do anything about it, but I guess because he doesn't care, like you said.
Well, I guess it made fodder for future episodes and plot points and why, you know, he was out of money or whatever, or why she had to sell her hair, you know, for different things.
What was it called?
In
No
a future
Ma'am?
Episode.
The,
No Ma'am. Yeah, No exactly. Ma'am,
the group that they form.
Yeah. So, and that reminds me, right after they wrap up Al's existing shirt as his gift, the neighbors, Steve and Marcy, that's when they show up at the door. I had gotten ahead of myself earlier.
Or I think actually even before then, there's a knock on the door, and it's a package for them from the Schmidts from Philadelphia.
Yeah, from Philadelphia. Yeah. Yeah. Do the Rhodes live here? Why? Because I have a package for them. Oh, yeah. I'm Mrs. Rhodes.
Yeah.
We got from the Schmidts from Philadelphia.
Yeah, so Al comes back and she shows him, and it's like, look, this is from the Schmidts. And he's like, oh, they're good people.
Oh, they're good people. That's right. That's when the door, and that's yeah, when the that's doorbell when, rings yeah, with Stephen Marcy. Stephen You're right. Marcy I had completely forgotten about the package guy.
Yeah. So they show up, they bring the presents. She's like, yeah, she does that whole thank you for labeling them so we won't get them confused with the gifts Al got us. And
what'd we get? And they give her a fruit cake with a footprint on it.
Yeah.
Because Al had been kicking it around the house the previous Christmas.
Yeah. It was from his aunt somebody.
Yeah. Aunt Pooh's fruit cake.
Aunt Pooh. Yeah. That's who it was.
Oh, it's a fruitcake with a footprint on it. Mmm. So Steve says, Steve says, hey, have you been to that new Lakeside Mall? It's a sea of traffic. It didn't let up till we got near your mall, Al.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's it, he gets he, and that's when Al gets a little defensive about it, and they give him his gift, and it's
A
donation to the
it's like a
National Women's Organization of Women.
Yes. And then he says something about, do I get free tickets to their 10K man stomp?
That's right. Yeah, and that's the kind of writing that it's vulgar now, but it's still the kind of thing you just wouldn't say anymore. And there's so much of it when you watch Married with Children about things you just, woo, it's almost a bit of cringe now. We've been conditioned to, you don't say that kind of thing on TV, but it was a very different time.
It really was. I mean, when was it like?
And I'm not defending it either. I just, my point being, it's just what everybody did. That does not make it right. And hear it is very cringeworthy.
Yeah. And I mean, it was like a year or two ago when they did the Archie Bunker and the Jeffersons, the live remakes. I don't know if
you
watch those. Yeah. And you hear some of that dialogue and it's, jarring nowadays. But I mean, back in the 80s, we didn't think anything about it. It's just, like you said, that's just how it was.
Yeah, let's just feel glad that we're more enlightened now, maybe, and we'll just leave it at that.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So Steve is like, hey, let's, turn on the news. I think we might be able to catch that Santa. And of course, Al's like, well, they're not going to report on a mall. And
yeah, exactly. This is real news.
As soon as they turn it on, it's about the mall and the Santa that's parachuting down.
That's right.
As he jumps down, he's like, you can hear the news anchor saying, he seems to be waving his arms or something.
Well, that's the thing. He says, and here's the Piper Cub coming out of the clouds. Now, in general, you don't jump out of a Piper Cub, but okay, that's just Hollywood writing. So let that go.
More than I know about it, so I'll take your word for it. But
yeah, I used to work at a flight school. A Piper Cub is a very, very small aircraft. I did look it up. Technically, you can parachute out of a Piper Cub, but reality, no one would ever do it. That's not really that important. That's inside baseball right there.
Oh, I got it.
Okay. So he says, he's coming out of the clouds, and here's the jump, and what a tremendous free fall.
Yeah.
And then Marcy's watching the TV and says, why is he flapping his arms like that?
Yes. And then that's when the guy says something like, it doesn't seem like his parachute's working. Yeah.
He's blown off course.
The cameras can't find him anymore.
Yeah. We don't know where he is.
Yes. So that's when we hear like the rustling in the trees or something like that.
Yeah, like branches breaking. One of my absolute favorite moments in television of all time. They're all focused on the television. You hear this sound and all, I think it's six of them, turn their heads at the same time. And you see, it's obviously a dummy. And the way that it falls onto their back patio is absolutely, just falls like a sack of potatoes, doesn't bounce anything. And then they all look back at the screen. And if you watch very closely, you can see them struggling not to laugh. So,
yes, I did notice that.
Yeah, because it's just so funny.
Later on, when the coroner is talking to Bud, and he said, does anyone see it happen? And Bud says, I wish.
I wish. It's
like, well, he did see it, though. He was turned around with everybody else.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So it cuts, and then, it immediately cuts to commercial there. To recap what has happened, Santa's supposed to be parachuting into the mall. And one of the plot points that we didn't mention was that he was going to be dropping gift certificates from under canopy to the parking lot full of people.
Right.
So, you know, so he's on TV, they lose him, and then boom, he's dead on the Bundy's back porch, you know, from his chute not opening.
And you're
so it fades to black right there, hard cut. Yep. And then comes back, and Steve and Marcy are sitting on the couch, and Steve's trying to pour what looks like a bottle of scotch or something. And
yeah,
and it's a little hammy,
of course,
you know,
yeah,
the way they do it. But it, like, you know, his hand is shaking, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches, you know, in there. And Marcy's going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Over and over again, yep. And it's funny because Al and the rest of the gang are just, they're eating pizza.
Yeah, they're over. Would you keep it down? We're trying to have Christmas dinner over here. They're eating pizza, you know, over at the kitchen
table.
Over at
the kitchen table, yeah. He says, and then I think they even suggest, like, hey, you know what we should do tomorrow? Let's make some Christmas cookies.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and he says, you ghouls? Don't you realize ghouls, there's a splattered Santa on your back porch? What do you want me to do, Steve? Stop eating?
Yeah. And, of course, Marcy's still just, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Yeah, rocking back and forth, almost catatonic in there.
And then the coroner, who's played by, oh, gosh, what is his name?
I looked him up. Haggerty. I don't recognize him.
So I know him from, he does like a lot of bit parts here and there.
He's a huge bit part. I remember him in Wayne's World. Hundreds of entries in IMDb.
Yes. Yeah. He's always just that one guy. He's in like episode 1 or 2 of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He was like their former captain before Andre Brower comes in. And I mean, he's in like everything, you know, he's the guy.
Everything.
Yeah, he really is.
Super prolific. You would totally recognize him, but you'd be hard pressed to know, to name the role he was in. You'd say, wasn't that guy from that show?
Yeah, I remember him from Wayne's World. He was in Wayne's World.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's like him and also, well, I guess actually Ed O'Neill also comes out in Wayne's World. He's like the guy at the counter, you know. The
Wow,
Vietnam.
It's been so long. I don't remember any of that.
So I guess they ended up working together again. I wonder.
Yeah, so what do they do? What do they do at that point? You see the coroner, I think, and I think the people that are working with the coroner. Him. Yeah, he comes in with his notebook, and the people in the background, the paramedics or whatever, are, you know, basically have a body bag on a stretcher.
Body bag, yep. Yep, they're putting him up. And so he starts questioning him and the whole family. And then he tries to like comfort Bud, you know, because
he's
a younger boy. So he just wants to say, you know, Santa's healthy. He's alive. And, you know,
I'm sure he'll be visiting your house real soon. Shouldn't be too hard. Just look for the buzzards.
Yeah. And you can see the coroner just kind of at a loss for words, like, okay.
Yeah. And what does Peg say? They said something about him, like, oh, did you know the deceased? And she says, well, I've read about him in books,
but I think he's usually going up. Something like that. It's something.
Yeah,
that's
exactly what she says. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a few more back and forth. I can't remember exactly what they were. And that's when he says, did anybody see it? You know, see him hit the ground or whatever.
And that's when
Bud says, oh, I wish.
And, yeah. And then we get Buck, you know, the family dog. He comes in and he's got the sneaker in his mouth because
a red Converse, all-star high top in his mouth. It's so great.
Yeah, because the bit was that the Santa was going to be wearing these special sneakers, you know, whatever.
And oh, you know what? You're absolutely right. He said that the newscaster said that Santa would be wearing Reeboks from Luigi's in the mall.
Right.
But he wasn't wearing Reeboks. Those were clearly Converse. But okay, another. I like finding little editing gaffes in there. It's not
continuity
important
errors,
at all.
Yeah,
continuity error. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's in Buck the dog's mouth, and he runs in with it. And what does the coroner say? Like,
well, I think it's Steve that says something. I mean, it might have been the coroner.
Is that your shoe, Al?
Is that your shoe? Yeah. And he's nope.
Oh, and the coroner says, you know, Bundy, that's evidence. Ah, it's Christmas.
Let him keep it. Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly what happens next. Is that
Marcy's
when they
still
up the
freaking
body?
Out? And then that's when Peggy goes to comfort her, and she's like, "It could have been worse, you know." And,
oh, he could have landed on the picket fence.
On the picket fence. Oh man, can you imagine if he had been like impaled?
Oh man.
Oh, that would have been bad. That would have been super bad.
All right, so tell me what happens next, because it's a little fuzzy in there. Because I know what the big part coming up is. Is it when they?
So
did they pick up the stretcher? And they hear the jingle bells as they're carrying him. Or is that
there is later? That. Yeah, there is that part. And they're going out. They're literally about to take the corpse out into the street. And as they open the door, there's a bunch of kids just waiting for Santa.
We want Santa. Yeah.
And so he's like, uh-oh. And
slams the door.
Slams the door. And of course, closed, Al makes another joke about like the Easter bunny.
What is it? Did the Easter bunny hang himself in my front yard?
Yeah. And he's like, no, there's kids out there. He says it might affect their mental well-being or something. And so
he said, this will grow them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the coroner refuses to take the body out the front because the kids are there.
So Steve and Marcy at this point have had it, and she's like, I got to go home. And so they open the door, and there's all the kids there. And, you know, she's like, no, Santa's okay. And, you know, he's fine. He's alive, whatever. And then she just can't finish her sentence, and she starts to cry. So they close the door.
That's right.
And that's when we get another funny bit. Steve's like, I'll take you upstairs. And Peg's like, she can be in our bed. And she just kind of looks at him.
Grabs his arm or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, I'm afraid. Yeah. And he's like, I'll lay down newspapers. That's
right. And does Al go out to try to talk to the kids at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. They pretty much send him out, and he's like, we're trying to have a holiday here. Just get out.
He says Santa's okay. He just had some of Mrs. Bundy's cooking.
That's what he says.
Over the toilet.
That's what he says. You're right. Yeah.
But he'll be fine tomorrow or something like that. Yeah.
And so they're like, we want to see him. And he says, no. And then he gets hit with a snowball.
Yeah, that's right.
And so he goes back inside. And he, of course, at this point, he's just had it. And he's like, I'm rolling him out now.
Yeah. That's it. Haul him out.
Yeah.
And the coroner refuses on some sort of, legal sounding grounds.
For their
health. For the sake of their mental health or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think at this point, Peggy says, you know what you have to do, Al, which is a little bit of an odd line. It's an odd jump.
Yeah.
For what's about to happen. Because I have some questions here.
I don't see why Al had to do it. It seemed like the coroner would be the better fit for it. As far as stature goes.
Okay, so for the listeners, what happens is in a minute, Al is going to dress up like Santa and go out on the front porch, convince the kids he's okay, and that's going to move everything along. But so Peggy says, you know what you have to do, Al, and he just hangs his head. One of my questions, Jerry, is where did the Santa suit come from?
I was thinking the same thing. Who had the Santa suit? Because there's no way they took it off that body.
It was definitely not off the body. It fit Al perfectly. It's just convenient writing. We have to suspend disbelief a little bit. But I've probably seen this episode, 25, 30 times at least. Uh-huh. And these are the things that you start wondering about your 20th watching. Like, hey, wait a minute. Where did that Santa suit come from?
No, I wondered that too, because my first thought was, how did they get that off the body? And then I realized, there's no way. Yeah. There's no way they could have done it. There's no anything. No marks, if you will.
Yeah. So I think they cut to commercial at this point again.
They do. Yeah.
Okay.
When we come back in, it's the kids going, we want Santa. Come on, bring Santa. And that's when Al comes out. He's like, I'm
completely
fine.
Dressed like Santa. I mean, head to toe.
He's got the beard and everything.
He's got boots, beard, hat, everything.
And he's got a great line. I think this is like my favorite line of the whole thing, where he's like, I'm fine. I landed on my belly.
I landed on my belly.
It's like a bowl full of jelly, I guess. So.
Yeah, exactly. What does he say? Like, I need to get back to the North Pole or something like that. And the kid says, but we haven't told you what we want.
Well, I think they said, what did you bring us? And he's like, nothing yet. That's why I got to get back to the North Pole, with the Dancer and Prancer and Donald and Goofy. Donald
and Goofy, that's right.
And I think he even says something like, Santa hates the Lakeside Mall.
Oh, yeah. Remember, don't shop at the Lakeside Mall. Santa hates the Lakeside Mall.
So then one of the kids says, we haven't told you what we want. He says, Santa knows. Yeah. Then what do I want?
I love the way he delivers the line, too. I don't know.
What do you want?
Yeah, and sits down and lets the kids sit on his lap. And there's a horrible off-color joke there. I don't know if you want to repeat it about the kid sitting on his lap.
Oh, yeah, that is a bit risque there.
All right, we'll leave that one alone. You can watch for that one, but so he sits with all the kids and tells them what they want, and this is a funny opportunity for Al to be snarky about all the neighbors. Like, hey, isn't your mom the one who makes pies for everybody but those nice Bundys? The kid says, why did you come to old man Bundy's house?
Yes.
Because he's a great man or something like that. No, yes. He's a butthead.
And he goes, no, he's not. He's the nicest man on the block. And the kid says, wow, you must be Santa.
Yeah, that's right. And then a couple more slightly risque lines about, you know, the mailman and the kid's mom, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of stuff happened all the time in Married with Children.
And he says, yeah, tell your dad to come home around lunchtime when the mailman's there. And the kid
what
says,
will I get?
What'll I get? He's like, a brand new mommy or something like that.
Yeah, a fresh house and a brand new
fresh
mommy.
House. That's what it was. And a brand new mommy.
And I think they let him go inside at that point.
Yeah, finally he gets to come inside.
And I did try to look up those kids.
And there's leaving,
that one kid plays a neighbor kid in so many episodes of Married with Children. And I figured he must be in something else. And it's also
I know,
you know
one
he,
of
he's
them
probably
was,
our age now too.
One of them was David Faustino's brother.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember which one it was. I remember one of them.
David Faustino's brother was in a much later episode, and he is very obviously his brother. You can tell they look alike. This point, they don't.
Right, right. Yeah, one of them's old enough, Bud's old enough that you can't really tell the difference. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I like, as he's walking in, and one of the kids says, Santa smells like beer.
Yeah, I'm going to smell like hard liquor in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite lines in the whole show.
Yeah, that was a good one. And then he says something like, you know, on Dundee, on Dumbo, or hi-ho silver.
Hi-ho silver, away. Yeah. And the kids cheer and he walks inside. And I like how he rips. And the thing
right away,
is, Al's trying to talk to the kids when he first comes outside to the porch and he pulls down his beard. And it's obviously Al.
Yes.
Like, there's no way the kids wouldn't know this is Al Bundy.
Yeah, because I think he even does it like twice, right? He says something and it gets in his way. So then he just pulls it down under his chin. So
yeah,
you can see.
Completely under his chin. His entire face is exposed. But okay, whatever. It's just funny. Let's move on. But he walks in and he rips his hat off and he says, okay, all dead guys and non-relatives get out.
Yeah. Well, and doesn't he, on his way in, doesn't he get hit by another snowball?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, another gag there.
Yeah, I like those little gags like that. But
yeah, they really do add to it, and it's funny.
Yeah, it really is.
And I just watched this last night in preparation for being with you today, and I still laughed. And there's a couple parts, we'll get to them, that I was like, couple parts don't quite hold up. But in general, it's still
good. Funny. Yeah, it's still funny. Although I wonder how hard it had to be, because, you know, if you've ever seen those outtakes of The Big Bang Theory without the laugh track.
Yeah.
And it's like these long pauses in between. I mean, there's kind of a lot of that as well. I was very aware of the laugh track as I was watching this episode. So it just made me wonder, like, did they have to do the same kind of pausing? And how would you, as an actor, how would you do that? It seems like it would kind of ruin everything. So it actually made me respect them more as actors, because they had to not only stay in character, but they had to add these awkward pauses in there. And so I thought that was just I think of weird things like that. And so it just, I really enjoyed that, you know, just thinking that, man, these guys, they really get it. And it's really cool.
It had to be pretty tough to film this one. I would have been laughing the whole time, especially back then when this was fresh and you haven't seen it a million times. Yeah,
well,
it was funny.
Ed O'Neill has said it's one of his favorite episodes. And I think Kate Segal has even said that when you were talking about that scene where they were breaking, that they even had to like bite the insides of their cheeks because they wanted to just laugh so hard.
Yeah, I must have seen that same thing you did, because I knew to look for it last night when I was watching it again.
Yeah.
So Al says, all right, all relatives and non-relatives and dead guys get out. And that's when they lift up, the body. And as the paramedics or whatever are carrying this stretcher with a body bag, it's obviously jingling the whole time. And I think, doesn't Marcy freak out?
Marcy freaks out again. Yeah. In fact, she was coming downstairs and she sees Al in the Santa suit. And
that's
he says,
right.
Oh no, he was better off dead.
He was better off dead.
Yeah. And so she runs back upstairs. Yeah.
That's right. And we'll get to that, because they never leave.
They never leave. Yeah.
So. They're upstairs the whole time. That's the last we see of them in the episode. And then the coroner comes out and says, he says, Bundy, you seem like a decent guy, so let me give you a tip. Don't ever die with your jewelry on.
Don't ever die with your jewelry on.
And he flips the ring like in like a 30s gangster kind of style. In there.
Yeah,
and then, you know what we missed, Jerry, was one of the lines from that coroner. I think the funniest one
that
he delivers with the pizza, and he's eating a slice of the pizza and he goes, Ah, pizza always reminds me of my first day on the job, and both Al and Peg give him this great look.
Yeah, it's like kind of disgust, but at the same time, yeah. Curiosity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was much earlier, but that was funny.
It's a good line. Yeah, it is a good line. But this is when
they leave with the body, right?
And then the doorbell rings, and it is like the owner, I guess, of the Lakeside Mall, or spokesman, or something like that.
I don't know what he's supposed to be. I got more of an owner type impression or whatever.
I immediately recognized him as the host of Supermarket Sweep. I kind of geeked out about that because I've been watching a couple of the old episodes on Netflix of Supermarket Sweep just because, you know.
Yeah, it's a pandemic. You can do what you want.
You can pretty much do whatever. But yeah, so my wife and I watched a couple episodes and I was like, hey, it's the guy. So that was just a little.
Yeah, he walks in and he says, I'm from the Lakeside Mall. And Peg says, I love your mall. Yeah, we've got it all.
Yeah. And I think he even says is this where the Yuletide incident occurred?
The Yuletide incident occurred.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Al is still wearing a Santa suit without the beard. No hat, no beard at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. He's still in the full Santa getup. So then the guy's like, yeah, you know, there was almost, came out. And he's like, what do you mean almost? And so, well, my husband dressed up as Santa so the kids would know he was okay.
Well, but he says something before that, Jerry, because Al's line is, well, you took all my business and then you slam dunked a Santa into my backyard. And I don't remember how it came, but, you know, he's obviously mad at this guy because he hates the Lakeside Mall.
Let's see. So I think he says something like, look at my notes here. He says, you just took all my business, cost me my bonus, made my family hate me. And on top of that, you slam dunked Santa. Yeah,
they say, you're right.
Peg says that. And you almost ruined Christmas for every kid in the neighborhood.
That's right. He says you almost ruined Christmas.
Yeah. And he almost. He says, she says, my husband dressed up, you know. And he's like, wait a minute. So no one really knows what happened? And he's like, nope, thanks to me.
And then Al gets this great look in his eye. Ed O'Neill is a great actor.
He is a
totally
great actor.
Underrated. I was really watching here, and this is he didn't have a lot of roles before this. He had been a Broadway actor.
Oh wow!
But he wasn't a star of anything. He went on from Married with Children straight to Modern Family after this, and those were his two
biggest roles. Shows, yeah.
And both of them were 11 seasons of his career. He was still a relatively young and fresh actor at the time, but he's really good because. He does this thing with his face when he says, hey, wait a minute. That ought to be worth something.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, of course, the Lakeside Mall guy is like, not anymore. If the kid
in a totally cheesy 80s way, pulls the check out of his coat pocket and like tears it in half in front of them. And that was one of the things that didn't hold up. I was like,
Then he even gives like a real cringeworthy line about, you know, why should I bribe you for something you've already said? And
that would be stupid.
Kind of like paying
like the dead guy for disappointing a whole parking lot full of kids. Yeah. Yeah. And then a fake tear. This day is just getting better and better or something.
Something like I'm saving money left and right here.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. They really ham up the villain aspect of him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very like 80s yuppie. Guy.
Yeah. It is funny, and I understand you need to do this, and it's probably not funny to me anymore because I've seen it so much. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. And he just kind of he's like, hey, hey, you know, just laughing as he goes out, thinking like life's great. Yep. And of course, they're like, well, thank you, Al, look what you did. You cost us a nice bribe and a happy Christmas. And, you know, thank your father, kids. Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
And the kids deliver that line a lot of times in the show, and they do a great job, too. Every time.
Yep. They
really good.
And of course, he says something like, I let everybody down or I ruined Christmas or something. And they're like, you know, we're used to it or it's happened before.
Yeah, he said, the Santa corpse was a new twist, but
yeah,
you know, hey, that's what Kelly says. She said, well, heck, it's something to tell a psychiatrist later, right?
Later on in life, yeah. And then, of course, Peg says, well, it's a Bundy Christmas. And unfortunately, we're Bundys.
We're Bundys, yeah. And then the best part of the whole episode happens.
Where they hear something in the backyard.
And they're sitting there. It's again, they've brought it back to them sitting on the couch.
Yep.
And then you hear a noise outside and they all turn again. But this time it's just the Bundys.
Presumably they're
Steve and Marcy
upstairs.
Are upstairs, and they're never brought up again.
Yeah. I guess they're just upstairs. He's trying to calm her down.
Yep.
But as they're there, they like you said, they hear something, they go check what it is, and it's the bag full of gift certificates that Santa was jumping off the plane with.
Yeah, it's like a white sack, and it has fallen off the roof, and nobody has noticed it, and it just fell now, and Al leans over, and he's still wearing his Santa suit, so it's still very funny, and he says, it's $10 gift certificates to the Lakeside Mall, hundreds of them. And you know, Peggy says, we're rich.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually before that, there was another really great line that I liked, which was before they go check it out, you know, there's Kelly or
What's
that? And he says, I don't know, but if it's dead and has a red nose, we'll throw it in Steve and Marcy's yard.
Marcy's yard. Oh, that's right. I'm glad you remembered that, because that is a great line.
Yeah, I have it written down in circles, and I was like, oh, I got to make sure I say that. Yeah.
It's dead and has a red nose. We'll throw it in Steve and Marcy's yard.
We'll throw it in Steve and Marcy's yard. Yeah. But then
that's one of the funny things about the show, too, Jerry, is that it's never quite clear where the property line is with the Darcys.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they can look out their front door. And and they talk about seeing Steve and Marcy. And then other episodes, it's their side fence. Huh. So how can they be across the street and in the side in the same time? And I think I came across it on a forum or something, another continuity error in there. Like, it's like the Simpsons house. Like, you know, they change the layout a little bit to suit whatever is needed in the shot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yep. Hey,
so they have all these, they have hundreds of, you know, they have thousands of dollars worth of gift certificates. Everybody's happy. This is the, I don't know what the screenwriting term would be for this, but it's the happy ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they even start bringing up the music, and it's the Christmas song, but it's the original one. The Nat King Cole, if I remember right. And they paid up for that.
And because I mean, I imagine just to buy the rights would be, you know, pretty pricey for that song.
Yeah, exactly.
But
so they're all happy.
But I love it because they're like, let's go to the mall and, you know, go break the, you know, go.
Yeah, well, let's go break the mall. And the thing that I find funny is, you know, they start running for the front door. Al opens the closet, grabs his coat. He's still wearing the Santa outfit.
Suit,
he's going to go to the mall in the Santa outfit. And whether they did that intentionally or not, it added to it, because it made me chuckle thinking about Al Bundy walking around the mall dressed as Santa, spending all their ill-gotten gift certificates. It was so funny.
I think there was even a bit where he says something like, you know, well, hold on, let's bow our heads, you know, let's for a moment of silence that we owe to that jolly flat man.
Yeah, that one didn't hold up as
that
much
was
either.
That was a bad pun.
I think it was a bad pun back then too, but it was, you know, it was intentionally corny or campy, you know, whatever the right word would be for that. So the house is, you know, going dark. And that's when I realized, like, hey, wait a minute, aren't Steve and Marcy still upstairers?
Yeah.
that's just not addressed. And then the camera pans to the sliding glass door in the back, and you see Buck the dog
like,
throwing the shoe up to himself and chewing on it like a dog would do. and that's how then they fade to black, and it's just a really funny episode.
I think there's even a couple of bits here and there. I mean, it's a great episode. You're right. And I think this was one that is, at least as far as Christmas specials go, I think it's up there. It really is a good one.
You know, I remember this is an aside here. So I got married in 2007.
Okay.
And this is before Netflix. And I remembered we were going to Lake Tahoe to, you know, elope and have our honeymoon.
Oh, nice.
And I pulled up the DVR on the cable, and I was looking for this episode, because, you know, only people our age will remember this. This was not the age of Netflix. You had to go intentionally seek out these episodes that you wanted to see. This was one that I wanted to see every year. I didn't own it on any kind of VHS or DVD or anything. So I would, every week, I would go through the DVR and look at all the Married with Children episodes, because, you know, it was set to record Married with Children, but it would, you know, eventually it would be like a rolling thing and it would get wiped out. So if there was one you wanted to record and save, you had to explicitly mark it as that. And I have a memory of standing there. We have our bags packed. We're ready to leave. And I'm going through the DVR actually looking for this exact episode.
Nice.
So that there might be a chance that I'll have this. And, you know, I had the same kind of memory from college. We always were trying to record the Mr. Plow episode on The Simpsons. You know? It was like the Holy Grail. If we could just get that one on VHS. Yeah. But I just wanted this episode because it was one of my favorites and it just didn't feel like Christmas if I didn't get to see it each year. And I think part of the fun of it was the thrill of the hunt on the DVR. You weren't sure you're going to see it. And obviously life is very different now. I could pull this up.
You can just pull it up anytime.
I could pull it up quite literally in front of me right now on my phone while we're talking. But that's not what life was like even just 15 years ago.
So it's funny because I just released a bonus episode, a while back, and it was on Lois and Clark, and I kind of had something similar where we just felt my wife, she was my fiance at the time, we just kind of felt like watching it. And
yeah,
I mean, we didn't have it, so we had to go hunt for it, and we had to like buy the DVDs and, you know, go to, I don't know how many stores we went to find them all, but eventually we got all the four seasons of it and we literally just sat down and then just started watching them after that. But you know, it was just from a random conversation and like, oh yeah, I remember loving that. And hey, let's watch it. And you know, but yeah, nowadays you can just go to DC Universe and pull it up and you're there, you know, or whatever other place. I don't know where else is.
And Married with Children I'm going to guess that there are 8 or 9 Christmas episodes in their 11-year run.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's all. The first season definitely did not have one. So the max there could be is 10. I think it's 8 or 9. And there are a few others that are very similar to this. I just like to watch all of them back to back. You know, once you kind of get in the mood to watch a show like this, you're kind of invested in that little bit of a world, and you watch it for an hour or two. So maybe at some point in the future we'll do this again. Although I think those might have been 90s episodes, so it really wouldn't stay on brand.
Well, you know, I like to give a couple of transitional years in each direction. So we mostly go from 77 to 93. So I'm okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Well, it was definitely done by 94. The one I'm thinking of is when Bud and Kelly are trying to sneak a jukebox into the house for Al. And the whole time he's just watching TV and they're trying to do all this stuff around him while he's doing it. And it's just a great episode. So if you ever add that one to your list, make sure you star it for me because I want to be here for it.
Right on. I will, for sure.
All right.
You know, one of the things I always ask is, what would you say is your happiest memory or moment in this episode?
I'm going to let you go first because I'm trying to think of what I was remembering and I'm drawing a total blank now that you put me in the hot seat.
For me, I know that, you know, because I wasn't really allowed to watch it, I actually missed this episode. So watching it for this show was like the first time that I saw this particular episode, you know, and I've seen a lot of them, but for some reason I just missed this. So I don't really have a happiest memory, but the moment that I really enjoyed was when Al comes back in and Marcy, you know, he's dressed as Santa and Marcy just looks at him and says, you know, he was better off dead.
It's better off dead.
It goes back up to, I don't know, something about that. It is kind of cheesy, but it's just, it encapsulates like the whole ethos of the show. You know,
she has a very funny vocal inflection too when she says it. It's worth watching.
It really is just for that
whole part.
And of course, you can find this on Hulu and a few other places like Daily Motion and things like that. If you're not,
that's true. You could probably just find any of these episodes on YouTube.
Yeah,
you
know, pretty much.
They just couldn't keep up with the torrent of people, you know, putting up this content. For me, if I want to think about it in terms of my happiest memory, this does remind me of watching this on a 13-inch black and white TV
nice.
In the basement of my house in the 80s. And I know that sounds incredibly old, but I think I saw it as, it wouldn't have been I just don't think it would have been the year it came out.
So maybe
But I don't think it was in reruns then. So obviously my memory is failing me, but you know, so even if it's not this actual episode, watching this again last night in preparation, it totally brought me back to watching this show. And like you said, my parents weren't, thrilled with it. So right. you kind of felt like you were getting away with something
yes.
watching it. And it was way too edgy for a middle school kid. It was pretty inappropriate. Now looking back as a parent now, like, oh, good gosh. You know, we shouldn't have been watching that. I turned out okay.
Yes.
So
there you go.
That's probably my happiest memory. My favorite line in the episode though, is when Santa smells like beer. Yeah. Catch me in about 5 minutes. I'm going to smell like hard liquor. Yeah.
That's another good one. Yeah.
That's my favorite, line from the episode, not necessarily my favorite memory.
Well, so now on that note, because that kind of goes perfect with the next section, is this comes to my favorite part of the show, which is a little bit I like to call gag me with the spoon. So this yep. is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the show. So it could be like a bit of cringy dialogue yep. or, just something that felt awkward. But
I struggled with this one. I'll be honest with you, because I really like the whole episode.
Yeah.
And, but. This is kind of like the argument you could have a least favorite Beatle or something, or a least favorite Simpsons character. You know, they can't all be your favorite. So if I have to pick one that I didn't really like in the episode, mm-hmm. it's where the coroner says, "Dave, don't die with your jewelry on." And he goes like, "Heh, heh," and he flips the ring into his hand, and it felt very disjointed just watching it, like, well, that's lame. So yeah. that would be the gag me with a spoon for this one.
I gotcha. So for me, it was when they're talking about, the Santa was going to jump and he's going to be having all these gift certificates. And so they're going to go to the mall to try to get as many as they can. And Kelly, I don't know what it is about this line. I think it might have been her delivery or something, but it just, I didn't really like it too much. But she says, let's trample the weak and get all we can.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, that it wasn't delivered very well. It didn't, yeah. I don't know. It wasn't great.
That was my best Christina Applegate, but I'll leave it up to you listeners to vote. The winner will get a totally rad Christmas sticker, but Scott, I think you're okay because I have never won so far. So okay. you're probably going to be all right.
Does that mean I get a sticker?
Probably, yeah.
All right. I'll take it up with your elves.
There you go. Yeah. So now I got to ask G.I. Joe, they taught us that knowing is half the battle. What would you say is the other half?
I'm still struggling with this one, Jerry. Is it specific to this episode or just in life in general? I don't quite get it.
I've had answers that in both. I usually try to stick specific to the episode, but
I have one then. Okay. If Santa parachutes and splatters onto your back porch, check the roof. That would be that would be the knowing part, because there might be a bag of gift certificates up there. And if they hadn't, that episode wouldn't have ended in a happy way for the Bundys if that bag hadn't fallen down. So always check your roof.
Always check your, I like that. That's better than mine. Mine is actually kind of very similar to what you did earlier. And it is, don't die with your jewelry on.
Yeah. 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 So definitely some 80s cringe. Just, set your internal clock back and watch it and enjoy it for what it is. Don't, we've been picking it apart and reading way too much into it, but I'll be honest that I still love it. It's still one of my favorite things of all time, Christmas or not, especially Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is a good episode. I'm kind of sad that I hadn't seen it earlier, honestly.
Yeah, that really surprises me that you haven't. It makes sense given the context that you explained it in, but right. this was a cultural touchstone for people our age. Like, everybody I know has seen this. Maybe it's just a Northeastern thing, I don't know.
Well, I mean, no, a lot of my friends really were into it. I wasn't allowed to watch it, and so I didn't.
Well, you're an adult now. You can
exactly.
do that.
Exactly. Now I can watch it, darn it.
Yeah, if you want to stay up all night, Jerry, watching this, you can do it. I wouldn't advise it, but you can do it.
So, Scott, it has been a blast talking with you. It's just so much fun talking about this episode. And
thank you for having me, and thank you all the listeners who've hung in there to listen to two guys just talk about one of their all-time favorite Married with Children episodes.
It really was a good one, but I got
it really is.
What do you want to plug, man? Tell me about your show. Tell me about
I'd like to plug my podcast if I could. You're one of the reasons that I even do a Christmas music podcast, because I just enjoy the Christmas podcasting community and everybody in it, and everyone's been so great. So we have a show called Jingle Jank, and we find offbeat and obscure Christmas music on YouTube, and we showcase that. So each week we'll try to find a theme. We'll find five songs. Sometimes the songs are really bad, and we'll poke some loving, lighthearted fun at it. We never try to slam people and just trash them, because you know these are artists. These are people that put their work out there,
yeah,
for better or for worse in some cases. Sometimes the music is great and we love it and we have a great time, and you will learn about something that you didn't know existed. So you're not going to hear, you know, Frank Sinatra and Perry Como. You're going to hear stuff that for the most part you've never heard before. We did an episode on ska punk Christmas songs.
Yes,
we just did one
the,
on
the last two ones ago,
yeah, a great reception on that one.
And terrible grammar, two, I'm yeah sorry.
I do grammar good.
I talk good.
The last episode we did on yacht rock, and my co-host Jay,
oh,
who's been my he's been my best friend since high school. So we're talking over, you know, 30 years now. Uh-huh. It's been so much fun to reconnect with him. I kind of pulled him into doing this show with me because I just wanted to have a Christmas podcast. I'm under quarantine here. I'm diabetic, so I'm high risk. My wife will not let me leave the house. I've left the house three times since March.
And, oh, wow. You know,
it's September now. It's fine, Jerry. I've been practicing self-isolation all my life. Gotcha. I'm excelling in this here. But I wanted to finally do something different and unique, and I found it, and we're having so much fun. Yeah. We're going to do an episode next weekend on probably disco Christmas music.
Awesome.
And we're trying to find stuff that you just wouldn't know about. And that has been so much fun, because now I have this excuse and this reason to sit down and just go down a rabbit hole with YouTube. The reason that we pick YouTube is so it's easy to share the links and you can listen to the whole song. And it's just the discoverability of it. So
you know, sorry to interrupt you, but you're talking about a disco episode. You should see if you can find Irwin the Disco Duck. He had a Christmas album.
Oh, wow. And
I don't know if it's on YouTube. I haven't checked, but it's, yeah.
If it's the only criteria for our songs is that they're on YouTube, and that's purely for the discovery of it and the shareability. So if a listener out there has something in mind, if it doesn't exist, it's not cheating if you go and upload it to YouTube yourself and then just tell me about it. I'm happy to do that. It doesn't have to be any kind of official video. It just has to be there so we can find it. And we're having so much fun. The one thing I'll say is that we try to stay away from the tasteless stuff. And there's a lot of it out there. I have an 8-year-old daughter. I don't want to do anything that I couldn't share with her.
Right.
So it's family friendly, and we try to stay away from the taste list. You know, maybe at some point we might do a bonus episode with a couple of them, and then we'll mark them as like, hey, this one's not
explicit,
safe for the kiddos, kind of thing. That's not really what we're trying to do though. And it's so much fun. And if you're listening, go to jinglejank.com. You can find the links to all our socials. You can find our email address. Send us feedback, send us, you know, show ideas. We would love to hear from you. I keep a master list of a few hundred obscure YouTube links that I found. And there's, I don't think the well is going
to
run dry anytime soon.
Hear them all.
And we'd love to have you on the show sometime, Jerry. So
sure,
we've already done the 80s episode. So it's going to have to go slightly off brand for you,
but
I still think you're going to be a great co-host.
I just like talking Christmas in general as well. So yeah, I'm down whenever.
All right. Appreciate that.
And guys, definitely check out Jingle Jank. It's fun. It's funny. And I mean, you learn so much stuff that you never heard about. It's great. So definitely check them out.
It's opening up my taste to new music. And that's been an unforeseen benefit of it. So a lot of fun.
Right on.
Cool. Well, thank you, everybody. I really appreciate you listening and letting me talk about one of my favorite Christmas, you know, cultural things of all time.
Well,
which
again,
is the Better Watch Out episode of Married with Children.
Well, again, thank you so much, Scott. And I'm going to end it by saying, hey, Peg, you know what we ought to do tomorrow? We ought to make some Christmas cookies.
Christmas cookies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And maybe some eggnog with nutmeg. And you can check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like reliving your glory days as a high school football player, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.